Hey everyone, JJ Cooper here to let you know that the Baseball America Team Prospect Podcast are brought to you by you, the Baseball America subscriber. If you're a Baseball America subscriber, we wanted to thank you. Your subscriptions are what allow us to do what we do. We know that you want the most in-depth, well-researched, and well-reported scouting reports we can provide you. That's what we aim to do with our top 10 prospect list, the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, the top 100 prospect list, these podcasts, and all the prospect coverage throughout the year. But we can only do that because you support us, and for that, we thank you. And if you're not a Baseball America subscriber yet, but you love all this prospect talk, you can join the ranks of Baseball America subscribers today. Every Baseball America print magazine subscription comes with full access to our website content as well. Or if you prefer, you can subscribe to get our content online for less than $6 a month. Go to baseballamerica.com/store to subscribe today. And for those of you who do, again, we want to thank you.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined on the phone by Ben Badler to discuss the Phillies' top 10. Ben, the Phillies, we know that there's a very, very large group of talent in this system. We saw a couple guys graduate last year, namely Rhys Hoskins. Coming into this year, you had some options with J.P. Crawford, Sixto Sanchez, possibly even Scott Kingery if you wanted to go for a number one prospect in this system. Ultimately, we went back with J.P. Crawford, who has been the number one prospect before, fell a little bit midseason, but really rallied the end of the season to kind of show he was still a guy to be reckoned with and made his major league debut. Just overall, you know, in your conversations with evaluators around the game, what was their overall take on Crawford and maybe what caused his fall a little bit and then what allowed him to rise back up?
Yeah, when you look at what J.P. Crawford did, not only in the first half of 2017, but really going back to where we have, you know, up until that point in June, where he took like a 10-day break and then really turned it around, and we had more, we're talking about more than a little bit more than a full season of him playing in AAA and really struggling there. I mean, he's always had very good strike zone discipline. That didn't seem to waver too much, but he just was not being productive offensively, and some of the reports defensively early on in the year were not great either. So, I was still optimistic about him at that time. I felt like him and Hoskins were still, you know, the two best prospects in the organization, but Crawford really turned it around after he took that little break in the middle of the season for, you know, supposedly is for to rest a groin injury, but I don't know how much of it was more of how much it was a physical break or how much of it was just a mental break to let him kind of just take a bit of a mental breather and readjust. And in the second half, he just went on a tear. I mean, everybody saw what he did. I think he did a better job of staying on the ball and kind of controlling the outer third of the plate. That was something where he was struggling with early in the season and pulling off the ball and pitchers were kind of exploiting some of the holes that he had there. So I think he did a little bit better job staying on the ball and that showed up in his plate coverage and the overall performance and his ability just to drive the ball and impact the ball. The player that he looked like in the second half looked like the number one prospect, you know, one of the top prospects in the game that I thought J.P. Crawford has had the talent and the ability to be. So I don't think we can just kind of hand wave away and just totally dismiss what J.P. Crawford did over a pretty significant sample size through the time that he did struggle in AAA, but I do think that what he showed in the second half is more indicative of his true talent level and what to expect going forward from him.
Absolutely. You know, Sixto Sanchez really established himself as a premier pitching prospect in the game this year. How much of a debate was it for you, JP versus Sixto, that number one spot?
Yeah, I don't think there's a huge gap between them and even Scott Kingery, too, like you said. If we look back 15 years from now and Scott Kingery is the best player of these three, I wouldn't be too surprised at all. But Sixto Sanchez is, like, if everything goes right, you have a number one starter or certainly somebody with the potential to be a number one starter. It's, you know, he's sitting mid to upper 90s, touching triple digits, and it's very easy for him. It's not a max effort guy. It's very fluid in the way the ball comes out of his hand, and he repeats his mechanics. So when you have somebody who has that explosive of a fastball and it can command that fastball, that's partly why you see him move so quickly through the system. I think he has, he's shown flashes of a good changeup, flashes of a good breaking ball at times, at least with the slider. I think there's potential in both those pitches, probably more advanced with the changeup right now. I think that's kind of the key for him, is to continue to sharpen those pitches. We saw Adonis Medina in their system makes a big step forward with his off-speed stuff this year, and that caused his strikeout rate to spike. So I think that's really the focal point for Sanchez going forward, because there's not much more you can ask for in terms of the fastball from him, whether it's in terms of the velocity or the command.
Absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned Scott Kingery as well. I feel like that the top three in this system, that Crawford, Sanchez, Kingery, is kind of the tier one of guys, and there's probably a little bit of a hard break there before you move on to that 4, 5, 6. In regards to Kingery, he had a fantastic double A, slowed down a little bit triple A, but that's kind of to be expected. I think the ultimate question is just how good can he be? I think that a lot of people are very intrigued by him and his performance track record and are wondering, is this a perennial 2020 guy? Is it more of an average regular? Where is he on that line for you?
I think the sum of everything he brings to the table is somebody who can be an above average everyday guy at second base. There's not, I don't think there's one thing that he does like a Sixto Sanchez or, like a Jalen Ortiz who has one tool. You're like, oh my goodness, this is incredible. I think he does a lot of things well and does a lot of things that add value. It's, he's second base, so you've got a middle of the diamond player who has a chance to be a plus hitter. He's got some surprising power. Obviously, he played at Reading, and just about everybody can hit for power at Reading. But, I think he's, I hesitate to say, put a home run total on him just because of what's going on in the major leagues with these balls flying out of the ballpark.
And especially in Philadelphia, that short fence and right, he'll have even extra chances to go yard.
Yeah, it's, I love Rhys Hoskins. I'm probably the number one Rhys Hoskins fan, but his home run, just his overall production spiked way up once he got to the major league. So, a combination of the ballpark, the baseballs, and I think that, like Scott Kingery is not somebody who I expect to go out and hit, 10 to 12 home runs. I think he's going to be, have average to, maybe better power. Even in the future, he's not like a physically imposing guy or anything, but he's just got strong hands, strong wrists, forearms, the bat speed and the contact frequency will help the home run production. And then he's a good defender. I think he's the plus defender at second base, does a lot of things well there. And base running, he's a good base runner, smart player. He contributes. He adds runs at the plate. He takes away runs from the other team in the field, and he adds runs for you on the base pass. So when you combine all that, especially from a player who plays in the middle of the diamond, I think it's going to be a really, really important player for the Phillies in the future.
Is it fair to say, as I mentioned earlier, that Crawford, Sanchez, Kingery, top three is kind of tier one, and then you have that next, Adonis Medina, Adam Haseley. Yeah, so, take us through that process. Haseley was a top 10 pick this year. Medina is a promising arm, albeit in low A. You have Jojo Romero, a lefty who put up some good numbers in high A. Even Jalen Ortiz, another, top international signing. All these guys have grades on them as potential above average, maybe even more big leaguers. How did you kind of stack those guys up, and ultimately what led you to put Medina on top?
Yeah, I think you can shake those guys out in that kind of 4 to 6 seven, maybe eight range in a bunch of different ways. For me, Medina was the most. He separated himself for me. I liked what he did this year in terms of the adjustments that I was talking a little bit about before with the off-speed stuff. I think especially that introduction of the slider into his repertoire. I think that was really important for him. So you've got a pitcher who he's far away or he's further away than some other guys. He doesn't have any upper level minor league experience, but the track record that he has, the stuff that he has, all of that points to me to a guy who I think has a good chance to develop into a mid rotation starter. You go a little bit, lower in that bunch of guys, and then you have somebody like, Ortiz, who, wow, I mean, it's the adjustments that he's been able to make as a hitter are super impressive. There's never been any question about this guy's power. I just remember watching him play before he signed when he was 16 years old, and even the power then he had was extremely, extremely impressive. So this is a guy who has, 70 raw power and made a lot of adjustments this year with his hitting, his ability to recognize and anticipate pitches, off-speed pitches, and lay off them outside the strike zone, more or less, and had a, very impressive performance in a college-heavy league in the New York Penn League as an 18-year-old. Well, if everything clicks for him, he could be a middle-of-the-order bat. At the same time, I do want to see him do it at the full-season level. But if he goes out next year and hits like he did this year, he has a chance to be their number one prospect. So he arguably has more upside than Medina, but I think he also has, even though pitchers are inherently more risky than position players, I think that right now there's probably more risk with Ortiz than there is with Medina. And you mentioned Adam Haseley. That was kind of a tricky one to figure out, because the Adam Haseley who showed up, or the version of Adam Haseley who showed up in pro ball, didn't quite match the reports that we had from when he was in college and right before the Phillies made him a first round pick. And I think a lot of that was probably just due to fatigue. I mean, you can kind of say that for a lot of players, or it probably gets used as an excuse sometimes, but look, Haseley was a two-way player who's basically been playing since February. So, yeah. I think in his case, there's a legitimate reason to think, like, okay, this guy, when he got to the Phillies, probably there's fatigue masking his underlying talent and his true talent level. I've seen, we see it like in the Arizona Fall League sometimes, like Mike Trout, when he was there 1 year, looked really run down. I think Buster Posey, if I remember right, was the same way. And if you saw those guys then, you'd be like, doesn't look right. And that's just when guys are tired, when they're run down, they're overworked. That's just, you have to keep that in mind. You have to keep in mind sometimes what you're not seeing in the report. So to me, that the his ranking was a little bit tricky because of that, but ultimately it's weighting his report. I weighted his amateur reports more heavily than the pro reports. But look, at the same time with Adam Haseley, there's nothing really that jumps out at you that's like, wow, this is, something that really, there's no like 70 tool, I don't think, that he has. Even there's some risk, and I think he has actually a lot to prove going out next year, just to show this year in 2017 after he signed, that it really was just fatigue, and that he is somebody who merits that number 8 overall pick in the draft where the Phillies got him. But I think there's a lot of different and very defensible ways that you can go on ranking those guys, but that's the kind of the process that I went through thoughts that I had in terms of stacking those guys up where we did.
No, absolutely. It's interesting. You move down beyond that tier and you go Jorge Alfaro, who has gotten to the majors, but there's a little bit of shine off of, what his stock was. And he's an interesting guy to me, because he was a guy that for so long we heard, oh, he's a great defensive catcher, or he's going to be, but he never was. And then it looked like he finally broke out last year. All the scouting reports, all the pieces came together. He was our captain's catcher award winner for best defensive catcher in the minors. And then this year, you know, the year he was supposed to ascend to the big leagues and kind of stick there. And it just, you know, it didn't always all come together. You know, he hit okay, you know, his big league stint, 318, five bombs in 29 games. But overall, just what were some of the reports you were getting on Jorge Alfaro and what his future, you know, really is?
It's just a free swinger. And that's that for a long time has been the knock on Alfaro. And well, if he's a catcher, then there's less of an offensive bar for him to have to clear, especially with the raw power that he has. I mean, it's huge raw power, but this year in AAA, he's a 24-year-old with a .291 on base percentage. It's not going to work.
Yeah,
he just has not learned. He has not learned the strike zone. He has not learned a good offensive approach to be able to control the strike zone and get to that power in games. And it's not even all. You know, he doesn't walk much, which is an issue. But beyond even just the lack of walks, it's just swinging at good pitches. Mm-hmm. I think he has the power to hit more home runs if he would swing at better pitches and work himself into more advantageous hitters' counts. But the approach, the pitch recognition, the strike zone discipline is just, it's not there right now for him to, you know, to be an everyday player. I think the, you know, the raw talent that he has allows him or gives him the potential to do that. And the fact that he's, you know, already has some major league experience and is in AAA reduces some of the risk factor, which is why he's still in the top 10 and ranked where he is. But it's, you know, it's different when you have a player who's 17 years old or 18 or 16 even, and you have some questions about the, you know, the strike zone discipline. Another one, it's, all right, well, he's 24 and these questions are still coming up. So to me, there's, you know, he has a huge arm, big raw power. But the, you know, the question marks on him are some of the same question marks we've had for a long time. And it's bigger now because he hasn't really been able to develop in those areas.
You know, you mentioned minor leaguers where there's a shortcoming and you're not sure what's going to happen, but you mentioned Alfaro's, he's been in the majors, you know, 2 years in a row now, he's more advanced, so you have to put him up there. Another guy who, obviously a very different dynamic, but touted prospect who has not performed what people thought they would see, was last year's number one overall pick, Mickey Moniak. He dropped all the way to ninth on this list. Just overall, what was the biggest feedback you got from evaluators this year? And you know, how much of a chance do they see for him to bounce back next year?
Yeah, Mickey Moniak. It's hard to just say his name and then not just sigh right afterward, because when the Phillies drafted him number one overall, you know, I didn't have any issues with them drafting him. I thought he was a really talented player as a believer in the swing. And look, the swing is still there. It's a pretty simple, easy swing. But I mean, you just can't overlook the performance this year. You can't have a 284 on base percentage this year, and it's not like he was making up for it with big time power either. He just looked overmatched in low A, and that's very concerning. I mean, earlier in the season, I would say he kind of held his own at least. You could say that, but then in the second half, it just got worse and worse. And maybe some of it is just his first full season out of high school and got run down. But you know, you can't really mask the struggles that he went through. It was a disappointing season for him. And I think 2018 is going to be huge for him. Cause there's some signs that, okay, the swing is still there. He still athletic. He's not like a super athlete like like a Victor Robles type in center field. I wouldn't call him like a burner, but he runs well. But he's just got to show that he can bounce back next year. I think there's some things they were talking about with the swing, the athleticism, that are some things there where if he can learn to better manage his approach throughout the course of a full season in terms of the selectivity at the plate, I think that's going to be important for him. But what he showed this year was definitely a disappointment.
Given all that, when you were putting together the top 10, was there ever a concern that you'd have to drop him out of the top 10 altogether, or was there still something where you could, you put him at 9 and you say, here's why, and you feel semi-comfortable about it, or was it a little bit of hedging? I mean, just how far could you have dropped him, and what ultimately led you to put him where you did?
Yeah, I mean, look, you definitely can, I don't see a huge difference between number 9 and number, 12, let's say, on the Phillies list. I mean, you have guys like Ranger Suarez and Sir Anthony Dominguez who didn't make the list. And, you go further down, even a guy like Simone Muzioti, who I think has breakout potential for them. But it's hard right now for me to say, all right, well, 2 center fielders, it's hard to justify putting Muzioti over Moniak. But I think you could probably make the case for that if you wanted to with a guy like Ranger Suarez or Sir Anthony Dominguez, and both those guys have their own different risk factors, especially Dominguez with his track record of durability or lack thereof. Whereas, I still think there's a chance where this could be a 1-year aberration for Moniak, and he bounces back. And if he does bounce back and turns into the player that he showed at least in flashes more in the first half, and certainly before the, as an amateur when he was seen a lot and meets those projections, then his future value would be higher than those guys. But there's definitely a lot of volatility in Mickey Moniak, where if he bounces back this year, he can move way up this list, and if he has another year like 2017 and next season, then he could drop way down this list.
No, absolutely. You use the word volatile, and it's interesting to me because just from an outside looking in, it seems to me like there's a fair amount of volatility, 9 all the way through those names you mentioned, where there's some upside, but it's whether it's guys who are at super low levels, guys who have injury track records. It seems like, the top of the Phillies list, we know, hey, that's 3 top 100 guys. That 4-7 is 4 guys who, have a chance to be pretty good, and, 8's pretty much big league ready almost. But then you move into the depth, and it seems like a lot of these guys, it seems like there's some pretty high boomer bust potential for quite a few of them. Is that a fair statement?
They definitely have a lot of guys who are, I think, in the lower levels who have a chance to, be top 5 type prospects in the organization next year, but are far away. Guys like Muzioti or Jonathan Guzman, a shortstop, Francisco Morales, all those guys were with their Gulf Coast League team this year. Luis Garcia, a shortstop who they signed out of the Dominican Republic this year for $2.5 million. All these guys who I think have breakout potential, or a guy like Archimedes Gamboa, who has, very big splits both in terms of, when he's hitting from the left side versus the right side, and when he's in the first half or the second half. Daniel Brito, another guy. There's a lot of guys who I think have that breakout potential, which is one of the reasons why I think this is a good farm system, because in addition to the guys at the upper levels, like at Crawford and Kingery, and Sixto Sanchez, I'm sure he'll pitch in Double A this year too, and Jojo Romero also. You also have that next wave of talent coming. Obviously, there are a lot of Latin American players, and the Phillies do a really good job in Latin America, so I think that's a big part of it. But even a guy like a Kyle Young, a 6'10 left-hander, who they obviously got out of the draft too. So there's a lot of different guys who I think are good breakout candidates, you know, of all those names I mentioned, you know, maybe one or two of them end up being good big leaguers. But I would bet that at least one or two of those guys are, you know, end up being really, really valuable major leaguers down the road. I just don't know which one yet.
Absolutely. No, I think that's a good way to wrap it up with all those breakout guys. And everyone can read more about them in the Prospect Handbook. Ben will have detailed write-ups on them all. Well, I think that'll do it for Ben Badler. I'm Kyle Glazer. Thank you so much for tuning into the Phillies podcast. We'll have more coming your way shortly.
This wraps up another Baseball America Team Prospect podcast. A reminder again, our prospect coverage is brought to you by Baseball America subscribers. If you already subscribed, thank you. And if you don't, you can subscribe now and start diving into literally thousands of scouting reports we have at baseballamerica.com. Head to baseballamerica.com/store to subscribe today.